Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show this morning. We're meeting with William Fickman of the I Sold It franchise opportunity. I Sold It is a franchise concept that offers customers an easy and effortless way to sell their items online. This unique approach to online retailing gives customers a click-and-mortar store where they can drop off merchandise that they can sell and liquidate items online. Customers simply stop by a store to drop off items they want to sell, and the I Sold It takes care of the rest. And that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews. Our show today is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews LLC, and Franchise Interviews gives you an up-close and behind-the-scenes look at franchising through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get insight tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show on Blog Talk Radio, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And don't forget to check out our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. And Don, welcome back to another edition of Franchise Interviews. How are you doing today, my friend?
Great. Doing fine, Marty. How's your week going?
Beautiful fall week out here in Pennsylvania. And I know you actually made it out to Easton, Pennsylvania over the weekend,
right,
which I'm sorry we didn't get to hook up, you know, but it's beautiful out there. Today's like a perfect fall day.
Yeah, the real air, crispness.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to do the show outside today, but it's a little windy out there, so I don't think that's going to work. But our last show, though, we got to meet with Holly Siliday,
right,
who's a franchise attorney for Snell & Wilmer, and we spoke about a lot of different things. We spoke about bankruptcy and looking for signs of bankruptcy with businesses,
right,
and franchises, you know, both alike. Very interesting concept. What did you think of last week?
Yeah, I mean, it's a show and, you know, and information we have to go over, even though it's,
right,
it's negative, of course. No one wants to talk,
mm-hmm,
about bankruptcy, whether it's the franchisor or the franchisee, but there's a lot involved there, and Holly was great at giving all the advice and all the options and everything. And I was surprised that with the growing franchise industry, there's actually been less franchisor bankruptcies.
Right.
Which did indicate, I think, the number of franchisors that are going under maybe,
mm-hmm,
has increased, but maybe they didn't file bankruptcy.
Right, absolutely.
I guess the key is, you know, really to, you know, avoiding maybe bankruptcy or,
mm-hmm,
tough situation is really just communication, simple as it is.
Exactly.
It's really, you know, communication early on throughout the process to try to avoid, you know, a rough situation when you have to, you know, go into a bankruptcy.
Yeah, it is an important topic to discuss. Again, you know, you and I called it like the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, I mean, we... purpose of the show is really to inform people about franchising, although we are very pro-franchise. You know, we do talk about really everything on the,
right,
show, you know, and I think,
right,
that's what people love most about it. She was great. We asked her, what are some warning signs that a franchisor should look for, and you mentioned a couple of them. She said the franchisee stops communicating is the number one sign, as you mentioned.
Right.
Also, the failure to pay royalties. So when that starts happening, you know, you have to say, is there a problem going on? So it's revolving door management, delinquent taxes, increasing complaints regarding the franchise itself, you know. So these,
right,
are signs that the franchisor should actually look for, you know, to see if there's some problems.
Right.
See, what else did you mention? You spoke about how a franchisor can help get the franchisee back on track. And that's really what they want to do, don't they? I mean, you don't want this whole thing. I mean, really, court is like the last option, and you say bankruptcy is like the last option. She said, cut the franchisee a break on royalties or license fees, reduction or forbearance. Pull together a SWAT team of operations people or ask a successful franchisee to help the troubled franchisees identify and deal with operational issues. That makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, if a franchise,
right,
is struggling, it could be for a number of reasons. You know, perhaps they're not following the system. Perhaps they don't understand something. Perhaps maybe they're working too much in the business and not on the business, you know. So,
right,
it could be a number of variables involved, and I think it's a great thing, you know, try to get the franchisee back on track. So it was a very informative show. I learned a lot having Holly on this show, and, you know, I'd love to have her,
yeah,
back on, like, some future topics
as
well.
And what happens to the franchise agreement in a bankruptcy situation? And
exactly,
she made the point that when the trust is gone, that's when it's, you know, usually too late.
That's when it's over, isn't it? You know, and it's kind of interesting because it kind of segues into today's show, if you think about it. William Fickman of I Sold It, you know, I was doing a little research last night on their franchise concept, and you know, they get involved in liquidations of businesses. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? If a business needs to liquidate all their assets, you know, instead of trying to sell it yourself, I mean, just go to like an iSoldIt. I think iSoldIt is getting involved in that revenue stream as well. So it's like
that's a good point.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an outlet to try to sell.
And there's a lot of them out there too, right? I mean, you know, remember when we had Dr. Shane on the show, you know, talking about how most businesses fail. So, you know that down the road you're going to get, a lot of liquidation as well. So, it's an interesting type of franchise concept. I'm looking forward to having William on the show today. So, it should be interesting. So, what do we have going on? I guess I kind of hinted at what we have going on today. What's going on over the next couple of months, Don?
Well, next week, October 9th, we have Moran Industries.
Excited
Peter
about that.
Baldine, excited about that show. They have several different automotive concepts and franchises in their system, and we'll be hearing all about their history and and success on October 16th, the Entrepreneur Source.
Wow. A
very successful, one of the leading franchise consulting companies in the country. They've helped, I guess, thousands of people nationwide, you know, get into a franchise business. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, yeah.
Right, yeah. I, you know, personally work with many of their associates and consultants through financing. On October 23rd, meeting the franchise called Business Partner, end of the month. This is a pretty busy month for us, October. October 30th, we have Decor, a new franchise. And
that's interesting.
You know, and then we, like I think you mentioned last week, we have shows booked into the new year, so you know, a lot of good stuff coming up.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. This was, I think you remember, Don, when we had Tom Skarda, who was a guest on our show. It was probably about a month ago. He told us about this next story that I'm going to kind of go over right now. Can the government come in and ban fast food? And this article, found it on Yahoo, is LA's fast food ban draws skepticism. And the article is by Lisa Baitlin and Dan Whitcomb. Listen to this. Says a ban on new fast food restaurants in poor Los Angeles neighborhoods has made headlines around the world, but residents say they don't plan to give up their cheeseburgers, fried chicken, and tacos anytime soon. The moratorium, which was passed in July, was intended to fight obesity in low-income communities of America's second-largest city, where healthy food is very hard to find. The move is trendsetting California's latest salvo in an expanding war on the fast food industry, which is bracing for copycat maneuvers around the United States that could threaten growth. But residents are skeptical that such laws will have much of an impact in Los Angeles' low-income and minority neighborhoods, which are already blanketed with cheap and easy-to-find meals, and they name a bunch of different fast food places. And here's a comment. It says, it's stupid. It's our body. We choose what we want to put in it, says Tanya Owens, who's a 45-year-old nurse assistant, told Reuters. Edwin Tsai, interviewed at a cluster of fast food chains in the affected district, which includes the neighborhood of South Los Angeles, West Adams, Baldwin Hills, and Lemur Park, said there were reasons people eat at places like McDonald's, which is true. You know, again, it's fast and it's easy. So I think people will come here no matter what, Tsai said.
Right.
It says eye-popping calorie counts and the often unhealthy ingredients used in the fast food have made industry a favorite whipping boy for anti-obesity advocates and lawmakers. This isn't the calm before the storm. This is the storm, said California Restaurant Association spokesman Daniel Conway, whose group represents a major restaurant chain. Interesting. I mean, the article goes on and on, but you know, you have to remember this, that, you know, California became the first state to ban trans fats. I think you remember that. I think they were also the first state to ban smoking in restaurants. And you see what kind of happened, you know, how things, I notice, I'm sure you noticed, things seem to happen in California first and it kind of trickles back towards the East Coast. Just a couple weeks ago, we finally passed the smoking ban in restaurants in Pennsylvania here, you know, and a lot of restaurateurs were really concerned about that, you know. They thought that people weren't going to sit at their bars
anymore. I can't even see how this can be law. And I have that article. I'm looking further on. It says the law was intended to give officials time to attract healthy alternatives in grocery stores, which are few and far between in poor urban neighborhoods.
Right.
And it says here, state lawmakers have also backed a bill that would make California the first state to require chain restaurants with 20 or more outlets to list calorie counts on menus. So California, like you said, being a real trend center and things like this, but I can't understand how they can ban, you know, any type of business from being in a certain area. I guess we'll have to keep an eye on this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the IFA is actually involved in this whole thing as well, you know, as you can imagine. I mean, again, I mean, look at all the stories we do on fast food franchise chains. You know,
right.
So it's certainly going to have some type of impact on the franchise industry. But I'm, you know, totally against this. I mean, again, look at the healthy alternatives now that, you know, places like McDonald's are serving and, you know, your Subways and places like that. I mean, I think they are jumping on the bandwagon for healthy food, you know. So,
right.
You know, give them a chance. So
yeah.
I'm totally against this kind of a regulation,
right.
But interesting, nevertheless. So I know you had some interesting announcements and stories as well.
Yeah, Marty. Well, I just want to remind people of the Franchise and Business Opportunities Expo, October 18th and 19th for people in the New York and Long Island area. People want information, go to LongIslandFranchiseExpo.com.
Right.
A smaller franchise show locally here in New York.
Okay.
Now here's something, Los Angeles Business from Biz Journals. Yum Brand kicks off annual anti-hunger campaign. It's always nice to
this
see
good. Right.
Articles like this. Yum Brand announced Wednesday that has kicked off its annual hunger relief effort, World Hunger Relief. The company also said it planned to make a major announcement Thursday at the Clinton Global Initiative about its ongoing commitment to world hunger relief. Singer Mariah Carey will be featured in the company's World Hunger Relief restaurant posters as hunger ambassador, and customers who donate to the campaign at KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Long John Silver's, or A&W restaurants worldwide will receive a free download of her song, Love Story, from her CD. During the year's campaign, Yum plans to create the equivalent of nearly $50 million in awareness of the hunger issue through advertising, web-based communications, and restaurant posters. Muhammad Ali's wife, Lani Ali, will do the voiceover for the campaign's global television ads. You know, global hunger, Marty, reaches nearly 1 billion people due to higher commodity prices, increased competition for products that produce energy, natural disasters, and increasing demand for growing economies in Asia and South America. And Senator David Novak, who's the chairman and CEO of Yum Brand, says hunger is unacceptable. As a society, we should not and cannot tolerate the fact that 850 million people are starving and go to bed hungry every day.
Right.
It's kind of sad, but a great cause.
It is,
Yum
yeah.
Brand's a major, you know, franchisor, probably one of the most well-known with a lot of their brands, stepping up and helping people around the country.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They have a lot of great campaigns like this. I'm always so impressed at what Yum Brands is doing. We had them on our show. I say it was about a year ago. I guess it was Scott Hainer, wasn't it?
Right.
And he was fantastic, you know, so I'm always watching Yum Brands, and I think they really are great at giving back to society. So that's a great article and very important.
Here's something from the Wall Street Journal. Franchisers sweeten pot to woo buyers by Raymond Flandes. Wall Street Journal says franchise companies facing what many say is the toughest economic environment they've seen are offering two-for-one deals, reduced fees, and financing help to woo new buyers. They are also paying existing franchisees to help spread the word. The economy has made many would-be franchisees wary of taking big financial risks, while others simply can't get the necessary loans. Meanwhile, competition among franchisors is growing, giving investors a lot more choices. There are now about 3,000 different franchise concepts, according to the International Franchise Association. Emerald City Smoothie gives franchise buyers a kiosk in addition to a store. In a survey released last week of some 150 franchise companies, respondents said their franchise sales were about 72% below their 08 goals, with inquiries from prospective franchisees down about 48%, according to Franchise Update Media Group out of San Jose. But even as closing deals is becoming more of a challenge, as Harold Kastenbaum, a franchise attorney in Uniondale, New York, franchise companies have to be careful not to alienate existing franchisees when they offer discounts and other incentives to new buyers. That's a good point. How does it look for the guys who pay the higher price when they see the price is getting lowered, he asks. Making the situation more sensitive, existing franchisees, especially in the retail and home service sectors, are being hit by cutbacks in consumer spending. Doug Disney, president and founder of Tile Franchisor, Tile Outlet, Always in Stock, Inc., argues that in a slower economy, you need to be creative with initiatives and ways to increase awareness. As part of that effort, the Rancho Cordova, California company hopes to make it easier for franchisees to qualify for loans. Tile Outlet paid a $2,500 fee and submitted its franchise agreement for review so that it could be added to the Small Business Administration's pre-approved vendor list. That's the SBA franchise registry that franchisors could join.
Right, right.
It makes it easier for lenders to see that a franchise has been reviewed, is on the franchise registry. But the article goes on, potential franchisees still have to qualify for loans from banks and other lenders based on their credit, assets, and other financial metrics, but joining a franchise that has already been reviewed by the SBA gives them a boost. Since Tile Outlet joined the SBA list, three potential franchisees have begun the loan application process, the company says. So this is pretty interesting. I guess in a little tougher time, I guess certain franchisors are, giving more incentives to try to get more investors and
right.
franchisees.
I said they had to get a little more creative, and think outside the
yeah.
box, So it's which
right.
I think is really what makes it fun. And we've seen some very clever ideas, over the last several months, talking about articles just like this, So,
right.
and again, this is stuff that you deal with every day, isn't it? With the
right.
whole SBA and all that other stuff. So it's interesting.
I'll talk more about that in a second. Yeah, but this article says Emerald City Smoothie launched a buy one, get one free initiative. Franchise.
Wow, what do you think of that? I mean, it sounds
yeah.
attractive to me, right? I mean, it's makes a lot of sense.
Buy one of their stores, become a franchisee, and give you a free kiosk.
All right, well, there you go. I mean, I guess if you have a choice, Don, between one or the other, right? I mean, because typically,
right.
You're dealing with there's several smoothie companies out there, right? I mean, if you have a choice between
right.
one or the other, one's giving you a two-for-one. I mean, doesn't that make it a lot more
right.
attractive?
Right.
Are there competitors going to do the same thing? Are they going to pull like a Burger King and follow like a McDonald's strategy, and just do whatever
so it's
McDonald's
good.
Does?
Right. The investor franchisee can benefit during a tougher time because they're getting –
getting
more value for their money. They can expand quicker if they're getting more. And this is interesting. Gold's Gym Franchising of Irving, Texas, is giving prospective franchisees more time to get financing by expanding its development cycle to 3 years from two.
Wow.
So whereas you sign a franchise agreement, you have 2 years to build a few units. Now they're saying they realize the economy's rougher and
right.
getting financer. Financing is taking longer and is a little tougher, so they're giving people an extra year to complete that goal as opposed to 2 years. So I think that's a good idea.
So there's a lot of great things, happening, really. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there have been some benefits to a recession,
right.
But I think the offers seem to be a lot stronger, don't they, to the franchisee,
right.
So some very nice incentives.
Yeah, this franchise Interiors by Decorating Den at Easton, Maryland says it's seen a 33% decline so far this year in the number of leads it's received compared to last year, I guess, with all the different advertising they do.
It's funny, though, because we get, different, doing the show, we get a lot of different feedback. I recall some of our guests saying that there's actually been an increase in leads, but a decrease in, getting accepted for loans, because
right.
a lot of people are, again, going back to your term, forced entrepreneurship, looking
right.
at the franchising. So I'm not sure about that, if there's a decrease in leads or there's an increase. I've heard mixed, so I don't want our audience to get confused saying, 2 weeks ago you said this, so it's,
right.
it's you do hear different responses.
And then further, this Interiors by Decorating Den out of Maryland is offering to finance up to 50% of the franchise fee. You're up to about $15,000 for qualified individuals with a minimum of $55,000 in liquid capital. So,
interesting.
They're looking to help people out as well. So it's good that franchise companies are stepping up. So, interesting. Also here, the Wall Street Journal. The credit crunch squeezes franchisees. Restaurants worry tightened lending will impede remodeling new locations. This is by Paul Ziobro and Janet Adamy. And I think this is a good subject to talk about with Marty, with everything in the news
right.
a couple of weeks and the big banks folding and the whole
right.
Bailout situation by the government. It's on the table right now. But the article starts out, lenders are tightening credit to restaurant franchisees in a shift that could make it harder for owners to remodel existing locations and buy new restaurants. It's a sign of how the turmoil on Wall Street is spreading to large companies and small business owners. Panera Bread, Yum Brands, Sonic, Dine Equity, who are the owners of Applebee's and IHOP, each rely to some degree on bank financing to build new restaurants or sell company-owned locations to franchisees. And it talks about General Electric, GE, has been involved in franchise financing for years through GE Capital, large commercial lenders, becoming more stringent in pricing and issuing loans for new franchisees. Some restaurant executives and investment bankers say GE's franchise finance arm has essentially put a hold on new loans. A spokesman for the Fairfield, Connecticut firm said it is accepting new applications but not quoting prices until the market settles. He says, we're taking a longer look and even a closer look than we have in different times, he said. McDonald's Corp. warned franchisees earlier this month that Bank of America, another large franchise lender, had tightened lending to his restaurant's owners and that franchisees should find other lenders for immediate borrowing. McDonald's has since said its franchisees have access to sufficient credit for restaurant improvements. The lending pullback comes as restaurant chains are struggling through a deep downturn. High ingredient prices and consumers curtailing dining outside the home are eating into profits, and they're going to tighter credit and so forth.
It's true. I mean, it's an interesting point, Don. You know, I mean, it really everything is affected. I don't know if you've seen this. It's kind of unrelated to, well, let's say it's semi-related to franchising, but Hershey's recently they switched from cocoa butter making their candy bars to vegetable oil, and because it's cheaper, it's less expensive to make, you know. But there's been a difference in the taste. Actually, consumers are catching, saying, "Wait a minute, this doesn't taste like the old Hershey's bar." So, I mean, everything is affected, from the ingredients that you put in the French fries to the burgers to really everything in general. You know, it's all impacted. So it's keeping things I hate to use the word exciting, but definitely on our toes. That's for sure.
Yeah. So of course, when there's a downturn in the economy, I mean, it's going to affect every industry across the board, and franchising's no exception. I mean, still, obviously, franchise is a much safer investment. Just going on this article a little bit, while clearly other sources exist for franchise funding options, and recent pullbacks of two of the main lenders in the area are disconcerting. He wrote, last week, Sonic, a drive-in chain with 3,400 locations, announced plans to sell its holdings in more than 200 underperforming stores.
Wow.
It says here, lenders are requiring restaurant operators to put up about half of the loan amount in cash before going forward with a loan, according to one restaurant investor. Banks are asking for as little as 20% in equity, as little as 6 months ago. Some analysts think the tighter credit can help the industry by slowing expansion and reducing the glut of restaurants. That's an interesting thing.
That is interesting.
You know, viewpoint,
the fact, right, of what's happening, because it does seem like one was going up like every 5 minutes, you know. So,
and of course, I see this firsthand, Marty. Last night, I was on a panel discussing financing to the Franchisor Business Network here, the New Jersey chapter, and
right.
A bunch of franchisors. It was Adam Siegelheim out of Stark and Stark Law Firm, and here in New Jersey. It was nice to invite me. I got to go speak and meet some franchisors and talking about the whole current state of franchise lending, and so this is my business, so I see it firsthand what's gone on over the last year, and it's we're able to of course to get people loans. It's just a little tougher. We have to pre-qualify a little tighter, but it's mostly good for the investor franchisee, because we're making sure they have more cash reserve money, and they really don't have to make much of a salary from their new business the first year. Or if they're buying an existing franchise, it's going to have cash flow and be profitable, and so they're buying a business already making money. But if it's a startup, we're just being a little more careful that they, are able to weather the storm until the the business is profitable. So,
right, and to succeed. Again, it's a relationship. I mean, that's what it is. You know, the franchisor, their goal is always, not to again sell franchises. They're not in that business. The goal is to make the franchisee succeed, so you get the loyalty checks. You know, we were speaking to Brian Spindell of Postnet. It was like 3-4 weeks ago. You know, I mean, Postnet is getting some very nice royalty checks now. You know, it happens over time. You know, and they're pretty significant. So that's the business that a franchisor is in. It's not to just sell a franchise and say, you know what, you're on your own now. It doesn't work like that. So these are all very great articles, talking about what's going on in today's world. So.
And you mentioned
topics.
Brian Spindell, who we had on the show.
Oh, it did.
Some interesting article he wrote.
Brian's all over
we'll
the
go
place,
over
isn't
in the, yeah, we'll talk about this probably next week's show. He wrote an article in the Franchising World magazine about no-brainer technologies.
We should talk about that next week. I think that would be a great topic to talk about. We actually featured Brian in our newsletter
this week as well. So Brian is a popular guy. He's kind of all over the place, but I can see why. You know, he was a great guest. But today's show, Don, is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews, and Franchise Interviews gives you an up-close and behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show on Blog Talk Radio, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And once again, don't forget to check out our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. And I was mentioning earlier, Don, today we have a great show. We're meeting with William Fickman of the I Sold It Franchise Opportunity. And for our listeners, if you're unfamiliar with I Sold It, they're a franchise concept that offers customers an easy and effortless way online. This unique approach to online retailing gives customers a click-and-mortar store where they can drop off merchandise that they would like to liquidate online. We were talking a little bit about that here. Customers simply stop by a store to drop off items they want to sell, and I Sold It takes care of the rest. And something I forgot to mention earlier in the introduction is that William is the winner of the first GSEA virtual competition, and I actually got to hear it, and I was incredibly impressed with William. So, hey, William, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Good morning.
How you doing today, William?
All right.
Good, good. William, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and Don is the president of Diamond Financial Services. I didn't know you wanted to say hi, Don, to William.
Yeah, William, thanks for coming on the show. Congratulations on your success with the business, and you're also a top video expert as well.
What was that?
It seems like you're also winning contests as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Chicago later on in this year.
Yeah, I'm actually going to get to meet you there, William. I'll be there as
well.
So I'm looking forward to shaking your hand and taking a picture with you. We're going to put it on the website, Don, right?
Likewise.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. William, we always like to start off asking our guests, where are you calling from this morning?
Sure. I'm really from Los Angeles, California, a small city called Tarzana, California. So it's inside Los Angeles.
Oh, great. Are you is it two stores for I Sold It, William, or is it one?
Yeah, two stores that I own, and they're in Agoura Hills and Tarzana, California.
That's fantastic.
And that's all really L.A., Los Angeles.
Right, right. We were actually talking about Los Angeles earlier in the show, William. I don't know if you heard the first part of the show, but I guess the government is kind of stepping in and putting some regulation on the fast food industry, you know, saying kind of like no more McDonald's or no more Burger King, you know. So we were just kind of shocked at what's happening. It seems like everything happens in California first, and then it kind of trickles all the way over to the East Coast, you know.
Right.
So things are always exciting over there. But William, it sounds like you were kind of destined to be an entrepreneur. Again, I mentioned that I actually had an opportunity to sit in on that GSEA virtual competition on entrepreneurship. And what were you doing before joining or becoming a franchisee to I Sold It?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say I was destined, because I think I was doing a lot of entrepreneurial things at a really young age.
You
probably saw in that competition at 10 years old, I was making stress balls and selling them. At 12 years old, I had a dog walking business, and then at 16, I was selling art in a local art gallery.
Right.
And then at 19, I got this opportunity to be part of the I Sold It franchise, and jumped right on it.
Now, how'd that come about, William? How did you? I mean, did you hear about it? Did a friend tell you? Did you read about it in the magazine or online? How specifically I Sold It?
It was actually quite funny how we found it. My brother was reading an article in Entrepreneur magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were interested in looking into businesses in general, and boom, I mean, we read the idea, and it just sounded like a winner. It sounded like a service that wasn't out there, but that was really needed by people and businesses. It sounded like a service that we could use ourselves.
Right, absolutely.
And started looking around. We knew we wanted a franchise because of the marketing and the support and, of course, all the other benefits of franchising. We knew ourselves that when we're driving down the street and we're hungry, we don't stop at Joe's Hamburger Shop. We go to McDonald's.
That's true.
Or we go to Burger King, or we go to wherever we go, but it's a big name and it's a chain. So we wanted the same power in our business.
Right.
So we started doing research and came across two franchisors at that time. It was I Sold It and Quick Drop.
Right.
Since then, Quick Drop has, I believe, just about disintegrated into nothing today.
They quickly dropped out.
I don't even know
yeah.
if they. I don't think they've been franchising for years, and most of their stores are now
yeah.
gone.
Right.
But I sold it was clearly a stronger franchisor at that point, and we went with them.
That's
and
great.
Of course,
so
the founders were originally from Wetzel's Pretzels.
Oh, okay. Sounds interesting.
So
I didn't know
that. Was good. The back support was good. You know, there
right,
were qualifications from before were good.
That's great. And they had experience in franchising, you know, so, I mean, that's fantastic, and that's important as far as, you know, the leadership, William, you know, as far as the organization that you're getting involved with. So it sounds like, you know, you did your homework before
yeah.
making a decision. It wasn't a quick decision.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time looking into it and visiting stores and, you know, doing all kinds of things that we could do at that time. Of course, it was hard because the industry was so new that,
right.
you know, this is in 2004, so the industry we really started. And in 2004, there just was nothing around to even do really good quality due diligence on. You know, we couldn't
right.
go really eat at a restaurant and see what it was like or, you know, watch the traffic for a few days.
Right, right.
I think the nearest I sold a store at that time was in Texas. So it was very hard for us to really do good due diligence.
Right.
And
absolutely.
There hadn't been stores that were in business more than just a few months. So nobody really knew what we were getting into, but, you know, kind of like the Wild Wild West.
And I
so
guess
you're
young,
that,
too.
I was going to say, but you like that part of it, William, that like even though it was a franchise and structured, it really wasn't well known. You just liked the potential and liked the service it offered.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned McDonald's as the well-known name, but I sold it
right.
or not, but I guess you just liked the business model. Is that what really sold you on it?
Right, exactly. So it's a little different than typical franchising because it's franchising,
right.
you buy a name and, you know, you come out of the gate strong, right? But with
right.
I sold it, we've really been building our name and, you know, the eBay drop-off industry in general.
Mm-hmm.
We've really been, you know, driving awareness to let people know what we do.
Yes, maybe talk about that a second for people who don't know what I sold it is. Maybe just talk a couple minutes about what the actual service is. I think a lot of people nationwide don't really know, you know, what that type of business is.
Sure. So we're a brick-and-mortar store located, you know, in various communities with easy parking, and it's sort of positioned like a dry cleaners where you come in, there's
mm-hmm.
a front counter where we take in your items, and then the back of the store, you know, three quarters of the store is our warehouse, our production plant. And
right.
so back there we'll photograph the item, write up a description about it, post it online, and then it's in storage inside our store for that week, and then it's auctioned off or sold at a set price. And the buyer pays us electronically through PayPal or credit card.
Mm-hmm.
We collect that payment and then pack and ship it right there in the store to them. And then we mail our seller a check.
And the whole goal is obviously to get the most money for that item, get the most money and the fastest time.
Say that again.
And the overall goal, besides helping people to sell stuff, they... in a service, they don't want to sell it on their own or can't. They come to an I sold it store, but you know you want to get the most amount for that item and the quickest in the fastest time.
Yeah,
right.
absolutely. And we do that because we have a good reputation. People
mm-hmm.
trust us. They know that we're
right.
a brick and mortar store. We're not going to disappear or scam them. And it kind of takes all the you know the difficulty of dealing online out of the equation because
right.
we're there. We have a physical store. People can actually pick up an item from our store. They don't have to ship it. And so we get a lot of local people that buy something and just come into a store, you know, pay for it right there over the counter and pick it up.
Yeah, and I think you said it best, William, you know, in the competition when I was listening to you. You know, I mean, this is something that, you know, most people probably could do on their own, but, you know, why do it on your own when, again, you don't really have a track record on eBay? You know, and I think you use this great analogy, and I've stole it a couple of times, you know, you can wash your own car, but why not just take it to a car wash? I mean, it really saves a lot of time. I've actually sold items on eBay, and I have to be honest, I don't think I would go through it again. It's a pain
yeah,
in the neck
yeah.
from packaging and shipping and just everything else. You know, it just takes too much time.
The other one I use, and you can steal it too, is we all can cook our own food, but we like to go out to a restaurant.
That's true. That's right.
Right?
I mean, we know how to cook.
We know how to wash cars, but it's just when you factor in the time and really the skills.
Right.
That are required, and you're honest with yourself, you might not have that reputation or the skills to do it right.
Right.
And to do it professionally, and that's what we do. We do it all day long. We have a full staff that does it all day long, so we get good at what we do, too.
So
what about your age?
Started, William. I'm sorry, Mark. We're both so excited. No, I was just going to say, William, but I mean, you started this, what, around 19 years old, I guess?
Yeah,
most people don't start businesses as a teenager in their early 20s, but I guess by then you had about 10 years of, you know, work experience built up and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, always,
I think
as far as I can remember, I've always been working, and I've always enjoyed it. That was my extracurricular activities in high school, is working.
Right.
To me, it was fun, and you know, I enjoyed learning and learning about different businesses and seeing how they worked. And I always knew I would be destined somewhere in business. I was in school to be a CPA, so I was at the time working at an accounting firm.
Mm-hmm.
And if it hadn't been for this, I would have been a CPA now. But I'm very glad that I've taken this route. It's quite more fun.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It was a great story too, Don. William was telling in the GSEA competition, it was like he had a dog walking service, and you had too many dogs, didn't you, William? So you had to kind of like pass it on to your
friend.
Yeah, so you were still making money doing it.
Yeah, two friends that I had who were actually started walking the dogs for me, and I still, you know, went around and collected money and then paid them their money. And
exactly. Yeah,
the total dollars we're talking about are comical, but
sure, but still, yeah. Absolutely.
The were there, and they were real.
That's fantastic.
Talk about the history of the organization a little bit, William. And myself, I'm involved in financing, and I financed a few people investing in this type of business. But, the whole history of the industry is relatively new.
Yes. Well, we're only been around since about 2004, really. Today, I sold it's got 93 stores open and running. And most of those stores are now coming to a few years in business, and so they're really starting to see the efficiencies that have been built, the experience that we've been able to learn and build, and we've grown over time. We started with just, and this is one of the things I covered in my presentation at the GSEA, was we started with just one profit center, and that was commission on items, and really to get the business growing and going, we had to develop new profit centers, and today. You know, we have revenue streams from our shipping and handling, our insurance, our various other services that we offer. We sell cars, we advertise cars for our customers. Mm-hmm. We sell warranty on the electronics that we sell. So there's really a lot of profit centers, kind of like 7-Eleven started selling ice,
right,
in their history, and today he sells over 2,000 products.
Right.
So same way we're developing, and right now we've got a couple exciting new profit centers that we're working on that we should be letting out shortly as new services to our customers.
Yeah, so speaking of profit centers, we were talking last week, the topic of the show was on bankruptcy, and Don and I were saying earlier in the show that I guess, I suspect that, that is a nice profit center for you guys now, but the liquidation of, I guess, business assets, right? I mean,
yeah,
being
huge.
Involved in that.
We've seen that uptick this year and late last year. We've done a lot of small business liquidation. There's a lot of existing liquidation companies out there that'll liquidate, but nobody
right.
wants to handle the little guy, little
exactly.
store with a few fixtures, the little store
right.
with 10 pieces
your,
of this
right,
and
your
20
bakeries
pieces of that.
Or your client. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants
sense.
To deal with them because they're too small. For us, that's perfect size.
Yeah,
you're
filling
so
a nice
really
niche. Yeah.
Are filling that niche of small business liquidation, really. And, I know just about every small business around us that has gone out because they call us. And,
right.
And we've sold something for them.
That's great.
And with the success, William, of your stores, I imagine other franchise you're looking to invest in iSold would probably give you a call doing their own due diligence. How do you describe the iSold franchise system to someone else who's looking to invest in an iSold?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're franchising right now. They may have slowed that down now to get the existing stores, better growing and in a better position as,
right.
as we develop this new business. They may be opening up franchising soon. So I don't
okay.
think they're actively franchising right now. But as far as the system goes, we're a chain of stores across the country. The system consists of, our software, which is our backbone to our business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have a very strong check processing system. So all in all, we have an end-to-end system that goes from taking an item in to tracking it well to making sure a check goes out to our seller on time. And these are all the things that have taken years to develop that all other drop-off store chains have failed with, is that the business really seems simple when we got into it, right? Everybody sells on eBay out of their garage.
Right, right.
But it's really, really complicated because you have thousands of transactions with a buyer and seller on every end of it. And so keeping all that information tracked and flowing properly was really challenging without proper software and systems. And we've developed those systems over the years. And I think that's where we've seen success out of those systems.
And this technology, William, I guess it sounds like it's also going to go, I guess, beyond eBay. I mean, again, Amazon, I guess, would be like the next biggest competitor
to
eBay. So I guess you're going to get involved with that as well. It's not just going to be eBay.
That's really exciting. That's happening. Like right now, we're in the process of changing, growing beyond eBay, opening up to new marketplaces like Amazon, UBID, and really our own storefront has been our key focus this year. So really, we have products that we put up into our own e-commerce storefront. It falls into all the Google, Yahoo, and internet searches. And so we have products available that people are searching for on the internet in general and then coming right to our store and buying directly from us, not from eBay. So a lot of our business liquidation stuff tends to go that route because it's usually, you know, some inventory that we're able to blow out at great prices from the consumer's perspective. And from the seller's perspective, they're happy too because they were expecting pennies on the dollar, and we're able to maybe get 50 or 60 cents on the dollar.
Right, right.
And the consumer's happy because they're buying an item for half price.
Right.
And so it really makes sense. So really we've been doing a lot of sales off our own storefront, but all these things have definitely been driven by technology. And so we've got a solid platform that with just a click of a button can get an item onto eBay, onto our storefront, onto other websites, and kind of market it across multiple channels.
You ever bought something yourself, William? You ever buy something, something comes in the store?
Yeah, I know. You
buy it for yourself?
I get that asked all the time by everybody I meet, and the answer is very rarely. I don't really collect anything.
Right.
And anything I really need, you know, I tend to just buy.
Right.
For sure, there have been things that... you know, I happen to need at the moment, you know, a bicycle here, a PS3 there,
that
I was able to just buy directly. In those cases, I won't go ahead and bid on it. I'll just make an offer to the seller, and chances are they'll sell it.
Well, just stick to what you're doing good, and that's collecting money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, William, because I've seen the statistic, I guess, like if you were to go through the average households in America, I guess, what is it? They have is like $2,000 or over $2,000 in inventory in the average person's house.
AC Nielsen did a survey and determined that the average household's got $2,000 of unused goods in the
That's
attic,
incredible.
And garage, wherever they are. So if you extrapolate that across all the households, it makes our industry huge.
Billions of dollars,
Billions of dollars of sellable stuff. And the beauty of it is it doesn't end because the ongoing purchases continue and that stuff gets replenished.
Right.
So it's like the iPhone that, you know, the next generation comes out and everybody buys that. And all of a sudden, you know, we're getting a customer a day bringing in an iPhone.
Right.
So that, and that happens with everything, you know, with shoes, with handbags, with every kind of electronic that comes out. As people buy new, you know, there's something old that they need to get rid of, a new watch, a new cell phone, a new car,
whatever
the case may be.
So, William, was this all thought of your thought process before you made a decision on it? You know, going over, you know, this scenario. Like, how long was your time between you sold it and then eventually said yes, I want to go ahead and invest with it? Was there a time period?
It was very quick, and probably in, you know, thinking back to those times, too quick for buying a business. It was probably a matter of maybe just a few weeks, maybe 2 weeks.
Wow.
Of actually, you know, finding I sold it and then signing up with I sold it. But at that time, it was the concept was growing so fast, like wildfire, that it was kind of like if we didn't move fast, somebody else would be buying the franchise and opening stores where we wanted them.
Right. Yeah,
and luckily, we were able to do it fast and get stores, you know, around our home. So we didn't get stuck with, you know, franchise territories that were farther away or would require us to move.
Right. I like the repeat sale factor too, William. I mean, it must be, you know, I guess the first sale is always the most difficult, you know, but once a customer has worked with you or I sold it, I think it's probably much easier to get that customer to come back over and over and over again and kind of constantly, as you say, sell their inventory. So it's just the business model seems to make a lot of sense. I can understand why you were attracted to it, you know, especially having an accounting background as well.
Yeah, it totally does make sense. And we've seen, you know, there is some risk that a customer perceives when they're dealing with a new business, because they're like, well, I'm going to drop off my valuable item here, but, you know, what if you go out, or what if you disappear, or what if you're out? You know, the customer is always very skeptical, because they drop off an item and they leave with a piece of paper, their receipt that they did so. And so that's always pretty challenging for customers to get over the first time. It's gotten better, as we've noticed, as the longer we've been in business, because now there's a big trust built up in the community, and friends tell friends, and that always carries a lot of weight. But yeah, we have seen it in the beginning where somebody would bring in a $30 item, we'd sell it, and the next week really be back with that $2,000 guitar. And we're like, well, why didn't you bring this in first? And the whole thing is, well, I wanted to test you guys.
Exactly.
And they're honest about it.
Yeah.
And we've seen that where somebody sells a few things and then it works, and the next week they're really in with a truckload of stuff.
Right.
That's what they really had to sell. So it's always been kind of funny how our customers will test us, but we appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Is it would you say it's a recession? I hate to use the word recession-proof, William, type of business, but would you say, I mean, again, in tough times, it sounds like this concept might even do a little better when the economy is slower?
I consider it counter-cyclical. So yeah, absolutely, because right now we've got businesses which are closing more often, and so they're calling us more often. And, you know, gas prices have been really high, so people are literally more motivated to sell their stuff. You know, I would say we serve a different level of customer. Like, a pawn shop really serves a lower level of customer that's more cash strong and more desperate.
Right.
We serve a little higher level than that, because a person's going to have to wait a few weeks to get money anyway, but they do need the money. And we do get customers bringing in art, rims, jewelry, whatever it is, and telling us, hey, I really need the money. I've got to pay bills. So they're not desperate. They don't need the money that day because their rent is due that day, but they do need bills that they got to pay.
Right.
And yeah, they are more motivated to come in, whereas before, you know, if they've got money and no bills to pay, then, you know, that item can sit in their garage for another 6 months.
That's true.
Before they decide to get rid of it. But now they are more motivated to come in, and yeah, we are serving more businesses on the liquidation side of our business.
That's interesting.
And we've seen that across all our stores around the country, just more, you know, an increase in volume.
Right.
Just with our economic times now.
Next question, William. I was just going to ask you, what's the most interesting thing that's happened to you since joining I Sold It? And I just want you to, I'm sure maybe you've sold some interesting stuff over the last few years.
The most interesting thing is that every day is interesting, because you're going to get some unique, crazy item in that you never saw, that you never thought somebody would pay $5,000 for.
Right.
But I'd say the most interesting things that have happened overall is we're in Los Angeles, so we get a lot of celebrity action. And I've personally been to Meatloaf's house. We've sold some worn outfits for Britney Spears, one of which was really exciting when she got caught without her underwear on in public, was that red dress. And we actually had that red dress in our store that we were selling.
That's
still for sale? I'd like to make an offer.
That was quite exciting. It got us a lot of media attention, and TMZ was in our store, and we got onto Fox on TMZ, and they were showing our store, so that was exciting. Mike Sherrard is a football player. He's a good client of ours.
So
we do get to work a lot with celebrities, and Lucky Me gets to go to their house when they have something about.
That's exciting. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's always been exciting. And, of course, every now and then we get a really crazy item that you would never even imagine would drive so much money.
Right.
But
what's the training like, William, for new franchisees? How was that whole process of dealing with I Sold It corporate and the training and the people you met and everything?
Yeah, so when we started training, like I said, we were probably one of the first few franchisees out of the gate. So a lot of it wasn't yet really developed. I'm sure it's changed drastically over the last few years as we've learned more about the business. But in the beginning, we did spend about 2 weeks working in the live corporate store, you know, doing the actual customer service, the photography, the packing, shipping, managing the store, looking at metrics and reports, and it was part classroom in those 2 weeks and then part hands-on, you know, in the store packing boxes type of training. So the training was actually quite good. I did kind of my own training while we were investigating the franchise. I went to work for another franchisee who was open. Right when we bought, actually, and before we were, you know, getting everything prepared and set up, I went to work for the first L.A. franchisee in Westwood just for a few weeks just to see, you know, she needed employees and I needed just to see how this business runs before I started running it. So I went to work for her for $8 an hour and learned a lot.
Had you already made your commitment that I sold it at that point?
Yeah, we had made our commitment at that point, and I was just giving myself extra training.
So after a couple of weeks, you're probably pretty excited. You now kind of knew the business and saw the potential. I imagine you were really just chomping at the bit to get back and get your own store going.
Exactly, yeah. We were just busting to find you know, locations. At that time, I remember it was really difficult to find real estate because at that time everything was leased up. It would probably be much easier today. But everything was leased up. The rentals were very high everywhere. And our location is very specific. We have to have parking right in front of our store.
Okay.
That's not always easy to find here in L.A.
Right, that's true.
We had to have a certain size and a certain geometric layout of the store so that it would flow properly. And all those requirements really made it quite difficult to find the perfect spot. But it took us about 4 or 5 months of searching and driving and looking at a lot of shopping centers while we did that. So we were all kind of anxious to get going, and it's like we couldn't because we couldn't find the perfect space. But anyway, about 4 or 5 months later, we found that a good space, and then another 4 or 5 months, another space.
Most of your business, William, just word of mouth built up? I mean, what type of advertising do you do?
We've done just about every type of advertising you could think of. We've tested a lot of things. Word of mouth certainly works, but we find that our customers really come into us about once a year, maybe even less frequently than that, because that's when they do their cleaning.
Yeah.
And word of mouth has grown over time. All the time we hear people saying, my brother uses your service, my cousin, my friend, my neighbor has been here before. But we are now down to, we do cable TV spots that we run locally, we have done some coupon books here and there, and now we're experimenting with some other type of local marketing like that.
Right.
That was interesting. Yeah, I was going to say in the beginning, Don, I remember you telling the story, when it was challenging, I guess, you know, when you first opened up the store. I guess you had to do a lot of, like, grassroots kind of marketing, you know. Which had to be a challenge, I guess, in the beginning.
Yeah,
and this is kind of against the norm, like I was saying earlier. It's with I sold it, not having that brand name, and then someone of your age starting up a franchise. This is not the norm in the franchise industry. Your average age is much higher, and yeah, there's a lot of newer concepts out there. But not only I sold it was new, but the whole industry was really new. So you really, there's risks all around you starting this. So, but you jumped right into it. You already had a lot of experience in business and confidence, and I'm sure you're just well on your way, William.
Yeah, so we did do a lot of that grassroots guerrilla marketing, just all kinds of things. And the other thing that's worked great for us is we have wrapped vehicles out in the street. So we actually buy vehicles, wrap them with our graphics, and put them out on the streets, and they're really our billboards. And that's the cheapest billboard you'll find is a clunker vehicle that you can wrap and put out there. And it works the best.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely the highest ROI out of all of our advertising comes out of the wrapped vehicles that stand in the street, because they get thousands of traffic passing it every day.
That's fantastic. Do you have a typical day, William? What is your typical day like when you wake up in the morning and then you go home at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think there's a typical day in terms of schedule, because it tends to happen at the same time, but there is no typical day in our business, and that's because we're not making hamburgers and we're not making french fries all day long.
Right.
We're selling these unique items and handling customers with really unique situations. And so one day I could be working with a customer who just foreclosed on their house and needs to get everything out of the house. And I had a customer who was like that in the medical business, who had a whole, huge $300,000 inventory of medical equipment that he was running out of his house, you know, a business he was running out of his house, and foreclosed on the house. And now he's got a house full of very expensive things that he had to clear out. So we're spending about a week just moving the stuff into our store. That could happen. Or, you know, a little coffee shop goes out of business and suddenly I'm working with them to get their fixtures and all that kind of stuff sold and out. Or, you know, various problems and issues and situations do come up that we manage. And then, of course, our business is new. And like any business, we've got a lot of change. Every day things are changing. eBay's been changing every day, as I'm sure you've read about in the news and stuff. So keeping up with all those changes and dealing and putting in new policies within our stores to keep up with all those changes is happening every day.
So, with what you've learned now, William, what advice would you give to another young aspiring entrepreneur like yourself looking to buy a franchise right now?
Yeah, so my advice goes out only to other young people out there because I don't know what it's like to be older yet. So the advice I would give is do it while you can, and that's been really my fortune. Is I was 19, living at home, young, you know, no family obligations, no issues like that, no obligations for time or family commitments, and so I was able to pour in all that energy and time into the business. The other thing I'd say is be sure you're well capitalized. It probably takes twice as long and twice as much money as you anticipated in the beginning. So make sure you've got those covered. And always continue to educate yourself. And I still do that today by reading magazines, reading newspapers, reading local papers, reading all kinds of books on business and anything to educate myself on business.
Yeah, it's great advice.
Read a lot.
Yeah, no, it is. It's fantastic advice. What's next for you with the GSEA virtual competition, William? What happens after that? Again, you were the winner of the first online.
Yeah, so I won the first round of the GSEA virtual competition. Now they fly me out to Chicago in November, and I'll compete live with 20 or 25 other entrepreneurs from around the world.
Wow. Well, you'll have my vote. I'll be rooting for you. I'll be out there in the audience.
Awesome. Thank you. So,
you give a guarantee, William? Do you guarantee that you win that on this show? Can you give that guarantee or no?
No, just a lot of hope.
He's very good, Don. William's very convincing, so I think he's got a good shot.
So just a lot of hope, but I will try my best. We'll see where we end up. That'll be in November, and then we'll compete. We actually make presentations and tell people about tell a panel of judges about our business, our plans, and there's certain criteria we got to talk about.
Great.
Yeah, and the judges are all entrepreneurs themselves. In fact, last year one of the judges was the editor of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Oh, wow.
Just prominent people like that you would recognize, other successful business owners that may have started little things and grown them into huge companies.
Right.
Those are actually the judges.
What are your plans for the future, William? you're so young at this point, it's hard to say which way you want to go, but do you want to continue growing this business, obviously, and what's after that?
Yeah, it's taken me now 6 years, but I did finish college.
Wow, congratulations.
Doing it part-time at night.
That's great.
I did finish that to get that, that's kind of my plan B or plan C, but I plan to give it at least the next 2-3 years into this business, growing it and continuing with it. And then we'll see. Maybe in 2-3 years it's a whole different business that now needs more of my effort to go to the next level. Or maybe we sell, or maybe I go to MBA school. I'm not sure yet.
That's fantastic.
But I'm keeping options open. So at least 2-3 years.
Sounds like you'll always be a business owner, though.
It sounds like that.
I'm afraid so. I'd like to go back to school, but I'm afraid I like it too much.
That's fantastic. What's the best way our listeners can get more information? We have a link up on our show page, just so you know, that actually links to your store directly. Is there any other way people can get information on speaking to you, or should they go to a website? Or
Speaking to me directly, they can probably, if they get to our store's website, I'm usually in our store, so they can call the store, they can email the store. From there, it'll get routed to me.
That's fantastic. And I want to thank you again, William. You've been a fantastic guest. And, again, I look forward to meeting you face-to-face in November in Chicago.
Great. Likewise.
Keep up the
Thanks
good work,
a lot,
William.
Yeah, great
Take
job.
Care. Yep. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
Liam. Bye-bye.
Great show, huh, Don?
Yeah,
it's very inspirational. I mean, you know, again, it's so young, you know, and it was interesting getting advice from William as far as you know, his advice to aspiring entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs looking to buy a franchise. You know, it's that's very interesting. I like the concept. It does make sense. I like the whole repeat sale factor, and again, they're getting involved with Amazon and a lot of these other online auctions as well. So it's
a service and it's helping people. You brought up the good point. When a down economy, more people are just going to need money for you know, basic essentials, and you know, that can help his business. Yeah.
And it's interesting, again, the average American household, I guess, having about $2,000 worth of inventory in their house, you know what I mean?
I think I'm going to tackle it this weekend with the garage. I probably have $2,000 just in my garage.
It's incredible, isn't it? So it's a great service, you know. It's again, it was just glad we finally had William on the show, you know. And, again, I'll have the chance to meet him face-to-face in Chicago, you know. So looking forward to all that. But it was a great show today. I really enjoyed it. And, again, next week we have, is it Moran Industries?
Moran Industries, yeah.
That's a pretty big show. It's a pretty big franchise, so looking forward to that. For our listeners, go to franchiseinterviews.com. Again, subscribe to our newsletter if this is the first time you're listening. Go to franchisefunding.net and the new Ready, Set, Go franchise.com, right?
I like the way you say that, yeah.
There you go. Well, I forgot last week, so I don't know if you noticed. But
I made
a little reminder. Good show, Don, and I'll see you next week.
Have a good day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.